A tide of milky light spilled in over the forests and the greens and congealed into sticky haze. It was a day without a dawn. The aircraft's window had grown a million-edged network of tiny fractures that pulverized the light into a dust of rare colors. I was seeing it through the visor of a balloon suit. On the seat next to me was an orange suitcase that breathed and burbled like a torso, killing whatever came out of me. The Avowed and the Pangendrums, who had been summoned to Convox from all over Arbor, were too important to risk infecting them with alien germs, and so I was living in a bubble until further notice. This did not make sense. Why bring me to Tredegar if there was any risk whatsoever? No dialogue between rational people could have ended in the conclusion that I should be brought here, but only in a balloon suit. But as Orlo had said, the Convox was political and made decisions by compromise. And it happened all the time that the compromise between two perfectly rational alternatives was something that made no sense at all. So my first glimpse of the precipice was through several layers of fogged, scratched, and cracked poly, and miles of haze. Smoke, steam, or dust, I couldn't tell. The poets who wrote of it always seemed to behold the precipice at dawn or sunset of a glorious day, and liked to wonder what the Thousanders were doing up in their turrets. They must not have known, or perhaps were too discreet to mention, that the lobe of granite beneath was riddled with tunnels for storage of nuclear waste, and that its inviolateness was due not to the strength of its walls or the bravery of its defenders, but to a deal between the mathic world and the secular power. I wondered what a poem would read like, written by one who saw the precipice as I did now, knowing what I knew. A snort of laughter fogged my visor. But when it melted away and gave me back again that stark, hazy, color-sapped prospect, I decided it could actually be a cool poem. The precipice looked 1,000 years older than anything on Ekba, and all of the stuff that so obscured my view gave me the same emotional distance as a cosmographer looking at a dust cloud through a telescope. Tredegar had been built somewhat farther away from the great cities of the late Praxic Age than Muncoster and Barrow. That, and the rugged look of the precipice, had given it the reputation of being isolated. The cities that surrounded Muncoster and Barrow had, of course, fallen and been remade 12 times since then, while similar ebbs and flows had lapped around Tredegar. Still, people in the mathic world insisted on thinking of it as a woodsy retreat. But we landed at a busy aerodrome no more than 30 minutes walk from its day gate, and as we drove there I could see that what I had identified as forests were really arboretums, and the pastures were really lawns for the pleasure of seculars who lived in great old houses tucked in at the verge of the woods. The day gate was so lofty I didn't notice we'd passed through it. An inlaid road of red stone, wide enough to drive 2 mobs abreast, veered to the right and plunged under a huge mathic pile that I mistook for the minster. But this was merely their physician's commons, and the red road was a sign for illiterate patients and their visitors. I was being squired around on a motorized car, since the suitcase grafted onto me was awkward to carry. My driver veered onto the red road and swung wide to dodge an old patient who was being aired out in a wheeled chair, festooned with drip bags and readouts. We plunged through a portal arch, then turned off the red road into a service corridor. We hummed down long rows of chilly rooms with metal counters and sinister plumbing fixtures, then up a ramp and into a courtyard. This was about the size of the cloister back home, but it felt smaller because the buildings around it were higher. Planted in the corner of this space was a housing module, brand new, with pipes and ducts snaking out of its windows and leading away to humming machines or through windows to a lab. I was directed to go inside and take off my suit. When the door closed behind me, I heard it being locked from the outside. Then the farting of a polytape dispenser sealing the cracks all around. I kicked my way free of the suit and powered down the suitcase, then stuffed them under the bed. The module had a bedroom, a bath, and a kitchen dining nook. The windows had been reinforced on the outside with metal mesh, so that if I turned out to be claustrophobic and prone to panic attacks, I couldn't claw my way out. and sealed with thick translucent poly sheeting.